show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, a Baseball Prospectus affiliate. Folks, we have some somber Royals discussion to get into this evening, based on some recent news. We'll get into that in a second. But first, of course, I am Jeff Herr, and with me is the never somber, always chipper, Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing on this opening day eve, if you will, at least for when we're recording this? Most pretty much all of you will be hearing this will likely hear it, if not opening day, sometime shortly thereafter, hopefully. But yeah, it's kind of shitty weather, and it's going to be not good weather for opening day and not for Easter this weekend. And yeah.
Yeah, great.
That time of year, I guess.
Yeah, it's just kind of eventually it'll decide that it wants to be spring, and it'll continue and stay spring. And then 2 days after it decides that, it'll be summer and 105 degrees. So
yes, this Midwest is the way of things.
Yep.
And possibly to go along with the weather, we'll just jump right into it here. We found out shortly before recording. We probably shouldn't have done this, so we'll take full blame here for this on the Kansas City Baseball Vault. But we were talking, you know, the Royals hadn't released a final 25-man roster yet. The deadline is obviously tomorrow, but so we weren't exactly sure what topics we wanted to cover. And then, of course, we find out a couple hours before we're supposed to record that, hey, guess what? Salvador Perez had a grade 2 tear of his MCL that will keep him out of the lineup for 4 to 6 weeks before the season even started, on the eve of opening day. So Salvador Perez will not be starting opening day. Drew Butera will, which makes the fact that the Royals have kept Drew Butera around that much more valuable, to have someone who, you know, they're at least comfortable with and is familiar with everything, that they can just stick right in there. But it still means that the Royals, a big piece of their offense and defense, is going to be gone for the next 4 to 6 weeks. And as much as one may like Drew Butera, he's not Salvador Perez, defensively or offensively. So, I mean, we're going to get to see exactly what he is over the next month. So, and maybe more, because, you know, in all likelihood, they will probably ease Salvador Perez back into the lineup in terms of his play on the field. So he'll probably start off as DH, I would imagine, for a little bit. Not sure, you know, once he gets back, just because specifically him being a catcher and it being a knee issue, you know, you definitely want to take that as serious as possible, so you don't, you know, rush him back sooner than he needs to be. So he may be able to hit and help the team that way, but not quite be able to get behind the plate. So it could be 2 months before we see Salvador Perez back behind the dish, if you will. So that was what I alluded to with the somber news that at the beginning of the show there, and truly unfortunate. You know, not only is it a big piece of, you know, the Royals and what their plans were for this year, if they had any designs towards competing, but, you know, it just kind of sucks. Salvador Perez, besides the fact that he's fun to watch just from a talent perspective, you know, he's one of the true players that just has a ton of fun truly playing the game of baseball, always got that big goofy smile on his face, always, you know, dumping the Gatorade, et cetera, et cetera. So that just makes it extra fun to watch. And, you know, that's not going to happen for the next month or two. So that really sucks. You know, the – we kind of discussed last week when we did our over-under show and we did some of our predictions. You know, it, neither of us imagined the Royals were going to be super competitive this year. And obviously Perez isn't out for the whole season, but if the Royals had any notion of competing for any sort of a spot, they need to get out to a fast start. And having Salvador Perez not in the lineup for the first, you know, maybe 2 months of the season will not bode well for any chances that they have of trying to start fast. Not that they still couldn't, but,
right.
You know, when one of your best offensive players and probably your best defensive player are gone, you know, those are holes, those are big shoes to fill. How they do that, you know, we'll see. Obviously, we know Drew Butera is going to be in that role, but how they're going to be able to make up between Drew Butera and the rest of the team for his lack, for the production they're missing with him, is anybody's guess at this point. So, yeah, I mean, what were the thoughts flooding through your head as you heard that news come across?
Well, I was actually getting into my car on my way home from work when I saw that. It was actually you had posted in the Slack something about Sal Perez, and I was like, oh, God, what happened? So I hop on Twitter, see what happens, and I just responded in there, like, what the hell? Yeah, it sucks. The timing couldn't be much worse. You know, you want Sal Perez to start the year strong and lead this team. He's going to be out. They say 4 to 6 weeks. I'm with you. I think they, one, they're going to end up having to probably ease him back in. It's a tear on the left side. So that's the same knee that he had the torn meniscus 6 years and almost 6 years and a couple weeks to the day.
Yeah, that was that long ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was way back when. That was back during our time. It sucks. You know, he had 27 homers last year, hit, what, 265, 270 or something like that. That's your leader. That's the guy that's going to be leading the charge for everyone, and he's out for 6 weeks, 2 months. You know, who knows what they're going to do when they bring him back. You know, he'll probably have to spend about – oh, at least a week probably on rehab assignment just to kind of get some timing back. They're not going to want to throw him right into action. If there's any kind of setback or, you know, any soreness or anything, obviously that pushes the timetable back. It's tough. And, you know, when you look at where Sal Perez would hit in this lineup, he'd probably be your cleanup hitter most days. You know, number three, number four hitter. And that's a lot to lose in a lineup that's already missing Jorge Bonifacio, and you don't know what you're going to get from Alex Gordon this season. And, you know, you have to switch out Sal Perez for Drew Butera. I mean, nothing against Butera, but like you said, I mean, they're very different players production-wise and in what they bring to a lineup. So that's tough. I haven't seen the actual announcement. I'm going to assume that they'll call up Cam Gallagher to back up, which is nice because I do think I'd like to see him more. He played pretty well last year towards the end of the season when he got a little bit of playing time, and Perez was out for, what, 15 days or so, you know, with that oblique issue that he ran into. So, and Butera and Gallagher actually hit pretty well, as I recall it. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I remember they both hit pretty well for 2 weeks straight. So, you know, maybe it'll kind of work. Maybe, you know, if Ned Yost is forced to actually play a catcher, you know, every other day instead of every day or 2 days on, 1 day off or something, maybe he'll find that they can be productive. But, you know, it's tough to imagine that they're going to hit like Perez would at any level. So it's definitely...
Especially the first 2 months of the season, which have generally been Perez's best.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we've talked about it so many times about his second half struggles. Some of that is, I would say it's just the workload that he plays so many innings every year and tries to play every game he can. But, you know, at the same time, he does start strong and finishes pretty weak. So maybe that won't be the case this year, but, you know, it's yeah, I mean, it sucks. It's a bummer, but that's kind of how it goes. Again, I don't, you know, we only predicted or guessed 72 wins for this team. So, I mean, you know, it's not like this takes them from being the favorite in the Central to maybe outside of a wild card spot. But if they did have any kind of hope, then yeah, that's kind of going to dash everything. So, it's unfortunate, but you know, long-term shouldn't be too big of an issue. Maybe, I don't know. The one thing is I hope they don't rush it. I hope that they are able to, you know, cause Sal's going to want to come back. He's, as soon as he feels like he's okay, he's going to want to come back, and they're going to have to resist Sal Perez, who would play every single game if he could. I'm sure he could. He would
probably be out there tomorrow.
Right. I would bet he would offer to catch for both sides if given the opportunity, because that's just the player he is. But, you know, they have to really kind of say, hey, no, you've got to take it slow. And if they're, you know, 5 to 10 games under 500 by the time he's ready to come back, then they don't really have much incentive to, you know, to rush him back. So, you know, we'll just have to see how it kind of goes and see how the Royals adjust to, you know, being without him for, you know, 4 to 6 weeks and probably even longer than that. But, yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting.
It most certainly will. I mean, it'll be curious to see. You know, I fully expect Butera to get most of the time, most of the reps.
Yeah,
but,
probably.
You know, like you said, I too felt the same way you did about Cam Gallagher. I was definitely intrigued from what we saw last year at the end of the season there. So, you know, the idea of him getting some more playing time just to kind of see a little bit more of what he's about is interesting, because, you know, I like that idea. And if you are of the mindset that, you know, the Royals should be one of those teams outwardly tanking, or should, you know, be not trying as hard as they seem to be to succeed, then, you know, you might be, this is probably something that you know, you never like to hear people get injured, but, you know, you might say, okay, maybe this will force the Royals' hand a little bit and they'll, you know, be a little bit easier, or make some trades a little bit earlier maybe than they would have normally. So, you know, who knows? I don't know if I'm necessarily, even if I think some of the moves were perplexing in the offseason, I wouldn't put myself quite in that camp. You know, it just sucks. You know, I'd rather have Sal Perez healthy, even if it meant that the Royals would be closer to a middling team that didn't make trades and didn't have a good draft pick. You know, there could be a slight benefit to this if they do worse and then end up getting a better draft pick. We'll never know, but I'd much rather Salvador Perez be here regardless. Yeah. So that kind of sucks.
Yeah. I can't ever root against the team that I follow. I understand like the logical point of view that is like, okay, if they lose, they'll get a better draft pick. They might trade guys. But at the same time, it's like I still want to follow them and enjoy watching the games, and watching them lose all the time, it's not fun.
No. We've done that.
We've done that, yeah. It was rough. There's some people that probably never came back from that. So, yeah, I don't really want to see that again. But if it is something that long-term, big picture for this season leads to them losing 4 or 5 more games and bumps them up 2 or 3 spots, okay, fine. I have no choice but to live with that. And if that means that the Royals are worse going into July and they're a little more aggressive in moving guys, then okay, well, that's fine too. So I'll just kind of deal with it. That's kind of my motto for this season is let's just see what happens. And I'm cool with all of it as long as they don't do something really ridiculous. And, you know, Eric Hosmer already signed for 8 years. So, I mean, they've kind of avoided that by now. Yeah, but it sucks. It's a lot more fun to be able to watch Sal Perez. So, you know, hopefully he's back more on the on the 4 week side than the six. But I feel like one, it's going to be tough for him to come back under the fastest time frame, and two, there might not be a reason to push it. So, you know, they got to think about long term what he can do. He's a catcher. You know, he's already starting to approach 30. You know, he's not in a position where his body is going to, you know, do him a lot of favors at this point. So hopefully.
And what do they have, 3 more years on his contract after this year?
Yeah, he's signed through 2021. So they'll have, almost 4 full seasons left of him. So, you know, is he going to catch all of those? I don't know. If he keeps having knee injuries, or if he has complications rushing back early from a knee injury, maybe not. So that's something that they have to keep in mind too. And hopefully, you know, that's what is kind of really what they're focusing on right now, is they kind of get that recovery schedule set up for him.
Indeed. And, you know, as we look with Salvador Perez with that injury, and then we look towards, you know, who's going to replace him, it kind of brings into, you know, what the lineup's going to be. And we just tweeted out just a little bit ago by Jeffrey Flanagan, we have what the full lineup will be, at least for the batting order and the positions that those players will be playing. The rest of the bench stuff, I don't know that we have official confirmation yet. At least last I checked, we hadn't seen it earlier today.
Nope,
and I know you were asking about that, if anybody had seen it, and nobody had. But we'll run through the lineup here. Obviously, Danny Duffy will be on the mound pitching. As far as the hitting goes, the lineup works like this. John Jay leading off, Merrifield to follow, Moustakas third, Duda hitting cleanup, Cuthbert next, Soler hitting sixth, Gordon seventh, Escobar eighth, and Butera now hitting at that ninth spot in the order. Now, the most interesting aspect of this is, you know, that's actually not terrible in terms of how you would see the lineup kind of shaking out on paper. And, you know, I think based on results that we've actually seen, tangible results, I think there's definitely an argument for Cuthbert in that five spot. Based on potential results, I think you'd rather see Jorge Soler there, but at the same time, you know, he's got to earn it. So putting him in the sixth slot and, you know, maybe possibly shifting them around if he starts to show that promise, then, you know, I don't have a huge problem with that. So, you know, in terms of the order, not that bad really, but the most interesting aspect, we were kind of talking about this a little bit before we started recording. John Jay as leadoff, but he's actually going to be playing left field, and they will be starting Alex Gordon in center field.
Yeah.
So we had kind of talked all offseason about, you know, is moving Gordon to center field what they want to do? What are their options for left field if he does? You know, and then we just assumed, given John Jay and his history and ability, that, you know, he'd be the center fielder and seemed to make sense. But for some reason, the Royals don't seem to agree. So they have moved him over to left field, and they've got Gordon in center to start off. Soler, of course, rounding out the outfield as the right fielder. So that'll be interesting to see how that goes. I don't know why the Royals feel like Gordon's a better fit for center field. I don't know if it's maybe I don't know. Do you have any ideas on that?
The main thing I can come up with, and I haven't seen them really say anything, but maybe it's just because you're starting out, John Jay has primarily been in St. Louis and Chicago, hasn't played a lot in Kauffman Stadium, and maybe it's the familiarity. But, you know, I don't know. I know that they feel that Gordon can play center field, And, you know, I think still the range is going to be okay there, probably pretty similar. So it might just be familiarity. It might just be they want to get the start and just kind of see it, you know. I don't know. It was a little confusing, too, because Jay played quite a lot in center field in spring training once the Royals had signed him, and Gordon was playing mostly left field. So, you know, it might just be something that they switch him out. Maybe they move him around and just kind of, you know, see who takes to it. I don't know. I mean, they're both guys in their 30s, so it might just be that they will swap them out and, you know, just to, you know, on Saturday when the Royals play their second game of the year, maybe Jay will be in center and Gordon in left. And I don't know. I mean, it may even come down to the pitcher on the mound. You know, if you get someone like Kennedy, who's primarily a fly ball guy, they might want Jay behind him in center to possibly field more fly balls in center field. I don't know. You know, or maybe it's what they're going to try all year. So this is going to be one of those things that, like, in 2 weeks, we'll probably have a better answer. For right now, I mean, we kind of knew this was a potential idea, but I didn't think they'd actually just go for it. So we'll see. I don't really have a good reasoning behind it, other than they feel like Gordon can play center and feel like he's probably more comfortable out there, at least on an opening day. So hopefully he plays pretty well there. I always think back to his first start in the outfield once he came back to the majors in 2010. And the first batter hit it to him and he committed an error. So we'll see if that happens tomorrow or as everybody's listening today, or maybe that happened yesterday if you're listening on Friday. I don't know.
Yeah.
So I don't know. We'll see. I'm not too worried about, you know, any deeper meaning. I figure we'll see what happens, and kind of I'm sure they'll adjust as things may change or as other guys look more comfortable in other spots and what have you.
Yeah, it just to me, I think mostly it feels, I mean, that's an interesting idea, the idea that John Jay, you know, maybe his unfamiliarity with Kauffman and, you know, especially, you know, with the game time and everything, and it's supposed to be mostly overcast, but if the sun comes out, you know, we could have some hashtag shadows, you know, to deal with. So, I mean, maybe they're worried about that. I don't know. But, you know, at the same time, I can't help but think that it feels more or less just like they're overthinking it. You know, if there is some sort of reason like that, you know, just keep Gordon in left and, you know, where he's most familiar, and John Jay is fine in center field. I don't know. Maybe it's something like you said. I mean, Jay's only here on a 1-year contract. Gordon's here for another couple of years. They don't have a center field option in the minors. That's close. You know, I mean, they don't seem to have a ton of faith in Bubba Starling. He hasn't earned a ton of faith either. So, you know, maybe this is a look towards the future type of thing. Let's let Gordon take his lumps in center field now. And then even if Jay, when he leaves next year, they'll have a viable option in center field. Who knows? I mean, that was definitely the most surprising aspect of the lineup here as we were going over it before the show. But man, I don't know.
Yeah. But you can see how Sal could really balance that out pretty nicely, fitting between Moose and Duda there. Much more kind of natural fit as cleanup guy, and then you get your left-right stuff that Ned Yost loves. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we'll see what happens. They'll have two lefties and then two righties. Maybe eventually Soler will hit enough to jump up there and maybe split up those lefties. We'll see how that goes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm okay with the 1-6. Gordon obviously didn't have a good spring. Escobar, we'll see what he's able to do. And Butera, he had a good year a couple years ago. Last year wasn't as good. So I don't know. It's a rough lineup, but it's not going to be that every day, I'm sure. So, but interesting to see it and kind of get that sneak peek and be able to break it down. So happy to see it.
Yeah. So nothing else really jumped out at you too much looking at the lineup. I mean, seemed pretty much as I expected.
Yeah.
Outside of the John Jay position switch with Gordon there.
Yeah, they seemed pretty comfortable with Jay at leadoff. Merrifield's a really ideal number two guy. Moose hitting third should get plenty of at-bats with some guys on base and potentially in scoring position. So that's good for them. And if the bottom of the lineup can do anything, then, you know, you might have something. But I don't know. It's going to change so much. So, but, you know, kind of tells you what they think about John Jay, Whit Merrifield, and kind of what they want those guys to do. So I'm happy about that part. I like the top three, especially the top six is okay. And the whole thing, I don't know. We'll see how it ends up. But it's a fine lineup. It's not, you know, 2015 exciting,
no.
But it's fine. It's okay. We'll live with
it. That's more or less exactly how I felt. You know, it's when you look at the last third, you know, that's kind of just like, well, you got to put them somewhere, I guess.
Yeah, I think that catcher spot's going to be ninth a lot.
Yeah.
So,
but I definitely agree. You know, I definitely like in the first three. I feel like there's a lot of disappointment in the future of the Royals, though, having, you know, being able to set the table a decent amount and then just not being able to capitalize, especially if you get some people on moving into that 7-8-9 spot. So we will see. I'm not trying to go to snap to too many judgments. But so that's our lineup. That's how they're going to look in the field as well. Danny Duffy starting pitching. What do you think as far as how he's going to perform? I think we're looking at a pretty good game from Duffy. You think he's going to have some? Sometimes he struggles. He gets a little too amped up. You know, he's been better at controlling that the last year or two.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, you know, historically that's been an issue for him. I mean, you think he'll be under control and be that kind of tight, focused Danny Duffy? Or you think maybe opening day might get to him a little bit?
The main thing I'm kind of concerned about would be his shoulder. He had, in his last spring start, ran into some issues. Velocity was down, control was pretty rough, and the trainer visited him twice in two-plus innings. He threw two pitches in the third and left. He said that it feels fine now. He was throwing some long toss the other day, so, you know, maybe he's put it behind him and it was just one of those things, but it's something to watch. I mean, he ran into an oblique issue last year. He ran into some elbow pain. You know, if those things kind of nag at him or if he's having shoulder issues now, you know, that's concerning. But they seem pretty comfortable with him. So, hopefully he'll come out and throw well. You never know because, you know, he could just be really amped up and want to stake his claim, or he could be, you know, super chill. There's a really good piece on The Athletic by Rustin Dodd where he talked to Duffy and talked about like the DUI from last summer and kind of how he spent his off season reflecting on, you know, how last year went and a lot of stuff. You know, he had some injuries. There was the Yordano Ventura passing, that was something that he brought up. Injuries, DUI, and other former teammates leaving. So thinking about a lot of that stuff, if you're subscribed to The Athletic, I would go check that out. If you're not, well, we're not really advertising for them, but I find it worth my time. So that was a good piece. Maybe that puts him in the right mindset to come out. It's not going to be his first opening day start, so maybe that helps calm the nerves a bit. Yeah, I feel all right about him, but, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he came out and had one of his, you know, 80 pitches in 3 2/3 kind of outings too, and really fought his control. So hoping for the best, but, you know, we'll, until he gets out there, I just don't know. It's hard to say what he's going to do and how he's going to react to, you know, all the pomp and circumstance of opening day. And it'll be cold, too, so that maybe that'll affect him. I don't know. But I hope he's all right.
You know, I don't know what Danny Duffy has to do in my mind to get to take away that fear that he's going to have one of those performances like you were talking about, you know, where he's got 80, 90 pitches and 2 1/3 innings or however much it is. But whatever it is that he has to do, he hasn't done it yet. So I still have that fear that he'll go out there and could at any point, you know, I'm pretty comfortable that he won't, but I still have that fear more mm-hmm. than I would, you know, with say like James Shields circa, you know, 2013, 2014, you didn't have that fear that he was just going to have a blow up game. And I shouldn't say blow up game because it's not in those games. Typically Duffy, he doesn't, it's not like he gives up a ton of runs or anything, but he just really struggles finding his spots. And I don't know if it's because it's happened enough before that teams are kind of used to it, that they can, I don't know if I say used to it, but, are aware of it to the point where they can say, hey, he doesn't have it today. Just lay off, sit back, and let him chew through his pitch count. And maybe teams are able to somehow notice it. And so when it does happen, you know, it happens, you know, a couple times a year for him. And he, like we said, he's been better recently. So again, yeah. I'm not predicting that's what happens. And I'm still feeling pretty comfortable that he'll go out and give, you know, a typical Duffy, you know, 6 1/3, possibly 7 innings or so, you know, maybe a couple runs, 6 7 strikeouts, something like that. You know, I feel like that's, you know, your standard Duffy line, I think, is a stronger possibility. But I'll always have that fear with Duffy until, I don't know, maybe until he wins a Cy Young or something. I don't know what it would take. But until something truly convinces me, okay, he's taken that next step, he's past that point, and you know, I don't have that fear in my mind anymore that that's what he's going to do. So but again, that's a lot of talk to say that I'm rather you know, I'm feeling about how you do, feeling, you know, okay enough that I'm comfortable he's going to put the Royals in through 6 innings or more, give the Royals a chance to win tomorrow. And that's honestly, that's what you really want. So
yeah,
we'll see.
I think a lot of that stuff is just stuff that gets imprinted on, because we followed these guys for so long that, like, you know, we've seen Danny Duffy from the start. So, I mean, the initial impression was, here's a guy who fights his pitch count a lot, you know, Eric Hosmer. Well, here's a guy who can hit for some average, but not a lot of power all the time and grounds out a lot. Well, okay, and then Mike Moustakas has those pop-ups to the left side. And it's like, you watch those guys for 6 7 years, and that's kind of what you remember. We see them more than any other fan base, so, I mean, we're going to be looking for them. So I think that's a big part of it. Duffy's been a lot better with, I think, being comfortable with any of his pitches at any given time, whereas early in his career, you'd see him just bail on one. Like, if he wasn't feeling the curveball, he just stopped throwing it.
Mm-hmm.
It was then fastball changeup. Hadn't developed the slider yet, maybe. So, I think that that gives him a few more out pitches and a few more ways to get guys out. And he seemed more comfortable the last couple of years with mixing it up that way and not giving up on pitches. And I think that's made him able to get through at bats without, you know, getting to that 0-2 to 3-2 to 3 foul offs and then walking a guy kind of spot where, you know, you have to use 8 9 pitches. You don't get the strikeout and you end up walking the guy anyway. Like, that's what hurt him so much in his first few years. And the last 3 years, he's been a lot better about that. So I'd expect that to continue. I think that's, you know, maybe just a maturity thing with him and experience and, you know, comfort in what he's got to throw up there. So I don't think we'll see too many of those. There's probably going to be some. There's, I mean, Clayton Kershaw has those too. I mean, believe it or not, every now and then.
It's not to say that, once Duffy reached that point that he would never have it, but it would at least eliminate the fear from me. Like, when I see Clayton Kershaw going out, I just assume he's going to go 8 innings, give up maybe a run, and have 10 strikeouts. And yeah, he certainly has those games where he only makes it 2 1/3, and he's got, you know, so every pitcher is prone to it, but it's just the fear and level of certainty of whether or not that will occur on that day.
Yeah, and it can just be triggered by one bad inning where it's like, oh God, he really fought it. I hope he comes back out next. You know, it's just, I think it's just, we're conditioned.
Yeah.
To an extent. So I don't know. It's probably nothing to worry about. I think it's just a symptom of the fact that we've watched a billion games by the same guys for most of a decade.
Yeah, and to Duffy's credit, you know, a lot of those times when early in his career he would have that inning, you know, 25 pitches, maybe more, and it would just kind of torpedo the whole thing and he'd only make it a few innings. You know, he's the last couple of years he's been able to take those innings in stride way more, to where he's been able to have, you know, a 17, 20 pitch inning, but not let it affect him, and then just come back out the next inning and get, you know, 10, 12 pitches and get through it. So, you know, he's definitely matured a lot in that regard, but, you know, just still that little inkling every time he gets out on the mound. But I think tomorrow should be fine. Yeah, I don't know how, I mean, the weather's going to be bad. So I don't know. It's supposed to be dry enough actual for game time. So I don't know. It's going to be cold, though. I mean, it was in the 40s today. It's supposed to be in the 40s, I think, high of in the low 50s tomorrow. So good chance of being in the 40s at game time. I don't know how it's going to be.
Don't like it.
It's going to be cold. The ball's not going to fly. It's going to hang out there. It's, you know, who knows how that's going to affect the pitchers and the hitters and everything. And it's probably going to make for a low scoring, possibly even boring game, as much as I hate to say, but it seems that that type of weather kind of lends itself to that unfortunate circumstance sometimes. So hopefully I'm wrong, but that's kind of how I foresee it going tomorrow. But yeah, hopefully I'm wrong on that one.
I hope it turns 65 because I'm going to the game. So
yes,
it's not going to, but I hope.
That would definitely be nice for everyone that's heading out there. So yeah, that's kind of opening day tomorrow.
Yeah,
things are happening. It's we got real baseball. It's getting kicked off. So unfortunately, we had the poor news today, literally hours ago, about Salvador Perez. By the way, I don't think we mentioned this when we were talking about it, but he was carrying luggage. He said is how it happened. So said he was carrying luggage, you know, from coming back from spring training and carrying it into his house and somehow
missed a step.
Yeah, level two tear on the MCL.
No more steps.
Which, I mean, I'm not saying it's not true, but I mean, you don't hear too often about, like, Bob from The Office tearing his MCL just, you know, unloading his car. And, you know, they're not finely tuned athletes. So
I think there was one year that Kevin Apier, like, messed up his shoulder falling down carrying, a bag of meat. Or like a deer carcass or something. Maybe I'm getting the player in the story wrong, but someone did something like that.
And maybe it's just something where, you know, if you weren't a professional athlete, it would just heal on its own and you wouldn't even need to go to the doctor. You'd just have some knee pain for a couple weeks and then it would be done. And so maybe that's why you never hear about Bob from The Office having that injury. And same deal if you're, you know, carrying a bag of meat and you throw your shoulder out, whatever the case may be, you know, since they're not professional athletes and they don't need to use their knees like or shoulders like that every day. Maybe that's why. And so maybe my point is completely invalid. But
there's not much reporting on Bob in accounts payable his meat carrying accidents.
No, there's certainly not any of that.
Yeah, the only other thing that's really kind of hanging out there is actually finalizing the roster, which I don't know. The only real thing that it comes down to there, we saw Ramon Torres was optioned a couple weeks ago, so Ryan Goins pretty much has a spot. Blaine Boyer, for some reason, the Royals really like him. I mean, he pitched okay this spring, according to the numbers. I can't say that I recall listening to or watching a game where he actually ended up appearing, but the numbers say that he was there and he struck some guys out. So they seem really intent on adding him. The intrigue with those two is that there's going to need there. You'll need a 40-man roster move, which you know, that might be Bubba Starling. He's already ticketed to have some extended spring training because of an oblique muscle. Maybe Sal Perez, if they think it's more of the 6-week variety, they might bump him to the 60-day DL and clear up a 40-man spot and try to keep someone. There's some intrigue with Willie Peralta and Birch Smith, who either of those might not even make the team. Peralta might maybe released. You know, he's on a really cheap contract, didn't pitch well at all in almost any game this spring. The Royals have a lot of guys that they want to put in there. So if it means, you know, just eating that contract and, you know, not worrying about them, they might have to do that. And Birch Smith walked a lot of guys, struck out a lot of guys, but he walked a lot of guys, had some rough outings. Since he's Rule 5, you know, they would have to keep him on the roster all year or return him. I don't know if they've really made a strong decision one way or the other with him, but if he left, that would clear up a 40-man roster spot also. So a lot of ways to kind of make that work. There's been some reports out there that Eric Skoglund and Tim Hill, both lefties, are going to make the team. Some speculation from Clint Scholes and others out there that maybe Jake Junis won't start the year with the big league team, but will effectively be part of the rotation just because they won't need him right away. You know, they could have an extra arm in the bullpen for 3 or 4 days and then call him up and then have him make a start and kind of go from there. So that's kind of the only intrigue. I mean, there was a lot about, you know, Hunter Dozier and Frank Schwindel and Ryan O'Hearn and Chester Cuthbert and who's going to play first and who's going to play third. And really a lot of that is kind of filtered out to pretty conventional roster construction. It's, you know, they've got a backup infielder for the corners and Ryan Goins can play short and second. So they're good there. Paulo Orlando looks like the fourth outfielder. So that works out. And the only other thing is when they call up Cam Gallagher and put Sal Perez on the DL. So, you know, in the end, not super crazy roster when it comes down to it. Not a lot of fireworks. But again, all of that becomes official tomorrow. The Royals haven't announced anything as of 8:19 p.m. on Wednesday. So by the time you listen to this, they will probably have made their moves. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see kind of how it works out. Opening day roster gets overblown quite a lot. You know, the opening day roster is usually not even close to how the roster ends up at the end of the year. A lot of moves will happen throughout the course of the season. But yeah, there's something ceremonial about it. It's Whit Merrifield's first opening day roster, so that's pretty cool for him. Mm-hmm. You know, so happy for him, especially when he played well enough to make the team last year and didn't, and then came in and played great all season. So good to see him kind of get into that spot. So, yeah, I mean, we'll see how it shakes out. We'll see what moves they make, and maybe they'll make some surprises and someone will get designated for assignment that we don't expect, but it sure feels like between like Bubba Starling, Kyle Zimmer, and now Perez, they can probably find some 60-day DL spots.
Yes.
Another wrinkle on that is that Bubba Starling hasn't been optioned to Omaha yet, and I feel like he's going to technically make the opening day roster and immediately be sent to the 60-day DL to open that spot. which is something they did with Hunter Dozier last year when they added – they put Terrence Gore on the opening day roster. It was basically they put Dozier on the 60-day, and Gore was his replacement. So I don't know. We'll see if they if they're kind of going to mess with that trickery. But I think that'd be kind of funny that Bubba Starley would technically
be on the opening day roster
that way. Technically, yeah. So I don't know. We'll see what happens. It's a long year.
Yes, it is.
We got here.
Yeah, and I feel like this year for the Royals is going to be really long. So
yeah. I think you're right.
Yeah, unfortunately. We'll see. So the season's already not off to a good start, but hopefully they can go out and win anyway tomorrow and make us all feel a little bit better despite all the news, the bad news that we got today about Salvador Perez. That's the hope anyway. We'll see what happens tomorrow, I guess. But until then, I think that's all we got. Was there anything else you wanted to cover? I think that's pretty much it. Just kind of waiting for it all to get kicked off.
Yeah, I guess the only other thing that we could note is that the Royals released Ricky Nolasco and Michael Saunders. So for all the discussion we made about those guys, they got released. They didn't make the team. They're free to explore other opportunities. So good for them.
Good luck to them.
Yes.
Yes. And we, yeah, so that's all we have. And hopefully, you know, if you're listening to this on opening day and you're going out there, you're watching, you know, have fun, enjoy. Opening days are always good. This is the 50th season of Royals baseball. They're kicking it off. I'm sure they'll have something special going opening day to commemorate the 50 years of the Royals being a franchise. And then if you're listening after, hope you had fun. Hope you enjoyed watching. Hope the Royals got a win. And we'll definitely be back next week, and we'll have actual, real, legitimate baseball and wins and losses and all the rest to talk about. And hopefully, you know, we'll have, you know, as you said, you know, in a couple weeks, the John Jay, Alex Gordon situation, you know, how the Royals are going to be able to cope with Perez being gone. We'll have, you know, more information. So every show from here on out, we'll have more information. We'll have a better idea about these things, and should make for the season will be, if nothing else, it will be rather interesting to see how it all unfolds, especially now that it's off to a rocky start before the games have even begun. So good luck to the Royals on what is hopefully a fun and good season. We'll see. Good luck to them and to all of us. Happy opening day whenever you're listening to this. It's always good times. It's here, folks. It's a little bit early this year, but I'm okay with that. We got baseball here, and that'll be good. So one, I suppose we should mention as well, since you and I are both KU fans, that the Jayhawks did make the Final Four.
Mm-hmm.
And for the third time under Bill Self, and will 15th overall. And we'll be playing on Saturday as well. So, you know, unfortunately, I guess not unfortunately, but the Royals will be playing that same day as well. But, you know, it's a little bit less of an important game for the Royals.
Right. Day two.
On Saturday. Yeah. Day two versus Final Four. And then, of course, if KU were to win, they would be playing in the national championship on Monday. So good luck to the Jayhawks and all you KU fans out there. Same as that. So as that season will end come next week, then baseball season will be in full gear there, with, you know, especially around these parts, with no football, no college football, no college basketball. It'll just be all Royals for the next few months, and we'll have plenty to talk about. So enjoy your opening day. Enjoy this weekend of baseball and basketball and everything else. And thank you all so much for listening. Of course, be go and visit our sponsors. You know, we have tons of stuff now with opening day, talking about predictions and, you know, what the roster looks like and all that kind of stuff on BP Kansas City. So be sure and get your fill by going there. And if you get the hankering to go out and watch in a bar setting, whether it's opening day or whether it's, you know, some of the games this weekend, or going to watch KU or whatever, Kelly's is the place to be. Kelly's is going to be packed, I'm sure, for the KU game on Saturday, and then if they win on Monday as well. So get there early if you want to watch and enjoy and have fun for all the good sports this weekend. And thank you so much for listening. We love you all. We couldn't do it without you. We really appreciate listening and interacting and talking to us on Twitter and sending emails and all that. We love it. Keep sending it all season long. We'll keep responding and talking to you guys and getting all that feedback. We'd love to hear from you. So we will see you next week when we'll be back. And until then, thank you all so much for listening. And as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com.
Hey, Troy, what are you doing this weekend?
I'm going to grab a beer somewhere. What do you have in mind?
I heard about this awesome new bar downtown. It's called Rage. The waitresses have a contest to see who has the most piercing.
Oh, man, that's not really my scene.
Well, there's another bar close by called Spit Cup. Check it out. The bartenders wear chaps, and every hour they shoot a guy.
No, seriously, I just want a bar where I can sit down and watch the game.
Okay, I've got just the place. It's called Lilac. You sit on pillows and you drink from eucalyptus leaves.
No, Ned, but I just want a place where I can get a cheap drink and watch the football game.
Okay, I got it. This place, it's got a TV. It's called 816. Libidotosis.
Yep.
All their drinks come in NBA hats.
Man, I just want a place like Kelly's.
Oh, you mean Kelly's Westport Inn? No, they've got all the basketball and bowl game. They've even got a heated roof. The view is really nice, too, if you know what I'm saying. Why didn't you just say you wanted to go to Kelly's?
Kelly's Westport Inn, 500 Westport Road. Make it your place to go any time of the week.